O Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Now Dhruva Maharaj will give his opinion on this matter about the Lord having a spiritual form. Itam evatra shri dhruvena nirvivada tvam uktam. With this same idea in mind, Shri Dhruva speaks of there being no reason to argue. Okay, we were having an argument, theoretical argument, between those shrutis that say this world is real and those say that the world isn't real. So Dhruva thinks there shouldn't be an argument. There's no reason for arguing. He says, Tiryanaga dvija saris vipadaitya deva Martyadibi parichitam sadasad vishesham rupam stavishtam ajate mahadadyanekam natak param paramavedmi nayatravadaha. Do we have to use this fan? Can we switch to another one? That doesn't. Is that okay? Translation. My dear Lord, O Supreme Unborn, I know that the different varieties of living entities, such as animals, birds, trees, reptiles, demigods, and human beings, are spread throughout the universe, which is caused by the total material energy. And I know that they are sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. But I have never experienced the supreme form I behold as I see you now. About this form, there is nothing to debate. Nayatravadaha. There's no scope for philosophical debate about that about the Lord's form that he's seeing. This is in chapter 9 of the fourth canto when Dhruva Maharaj meets Lord Vishnu. Jiva Goswami says, Atra Rupa shabdas yaiv obayatra vishesha tvena. Bhu pamurtam pamurtam cha param cha param eva cha iti vaishnava vakyanusarena cha atat param chatur bujaritva lakshanam rupam vapur iti artaha. Natak param. I don't know anything greater than this. Something beyond this means, atak param, means a form characterized by such features as having four arms. Two sentences, where, what? I'm doing that right now. I see. There's a sentence that isn't translated. That's why. Okay. It's two phrases. Yeah. Okay. It's missing in the translation. Can I mark that? Okay. Duly marked. So let me make up a translation. Here the... Well, he's saying, I don't see any form greater than this. And it said, and then the end of the sentence says, what he doesn't see is any form having four arms. Oh, I see. No, this... boy, I'm sorry. It's a little difficult for me to very quickly catch what it's saying. I haven't seen the sentence in a couple of years. Atra rupa shabdasya vibhayatra visheshya tveda. The word rupa has two different characterizations, two different adjectives. In accordance with the statement of the Vishnu Purana, O King, this Supreme has a form and he doesn't have a form also. He's supreme and he's also not supreme. So... I see. The form which is characterized as sat and as asat. No, but that's all the other forms of animals, birds, reptiles, and so on. They're sat and asat. I see. And he says, this is your gross form. All the creatures in existence make up your physical, your stavishta rupa. What are the terms? What and what? Stavishta rupam. Well, maybe, but I think param goes with na tak param. There is nothing greater than that. Yeah, but... I'm sorry, we're puzzling over this because I failed to translate a sentence. Let me read the commentary. Let's see if this explains it. Rather than puzzling over it, let's read the commentary. There are two statements in the verse cited here. In the first... Lord Vishnu's devotee Dhruva says he is familiar with the expansion of the Lord's energies in the material creation. In the first, in the second, he admits that the original spiritual form of the Lord is beyond his understanding, or at least was until now, when the Lord appeared to him in person. Okay, so there are two forms. There's the Lord's form. The material creation is his gross form. And then he has his own spiritual form. Dhruva says, I could never understand this spiritual form until now you've shown it to me. You've revealed it to me, and now I understand it. Okay, let's go back and try to figure out. So here the word form is characterized in both ways. You've got the gross form and the transcendental form. And that fits with the statement of the Vishnu Purana that, O King, he's both manifest and unmanifest. He's supreme and also not supreme. So his gross universal form is manifest and it's not supreme. And his transcendental form is usually unmanifest and it is supreme. Okay, now the rest of it I have translated. Atak param chatur bhujaditva lakshana rupam vapur iti artaha. Something beyond this means a form characterized by such features as having four arms. Since the word form in this verse serves as the modified noun in both sentences, and there is corroboration from the Vishnu Purana. I see. The way it's to be read is not that I don't know anything greater than this, but I don't know this, which is greater than that. You understand? I know the universal form. I know the bodies of the material world, different animals and species. But this form that I announce to you of you, this transcendental form, that form I don't understand. This form which is greater than the gross form. So na vedmi, I don't understand this form, this new form, which is greater than that old form. Okay, so something beyond that. That means something beyond that material form. Okay. And there is corroboration from the Vishnu Purana. O king, he has a form and no form. He is both different and not different from this world. Well, okay. Yeah, you can say it like that. This forearm form will be described later on. Okay, I'm not sure where later on. There is description of, I think, some specific description of what the Lord looks like later on in this Bhagavad Sandarbha. I don't know it means up to now I did not know it. Now you're showing it to me, but otherwise before now I never knew it. Okay, now the commentary again. There are two statements in the verse cited here. In the first, Lord Vishnu's devotee Dhruva says he is familiar with the expansions of the Lord's energies in the material creation. In the second, he admits that the original spiritual form of the Lord is beyond his understanding, or at least it was until now, when the Lord has appeared to him in person. Srila Jiva Goswami points out that both of these statements use the word form as the object of their verbs. There's only one word, rupa, in the verse, but it serves for both parts of both sentences. He refers to it as the visheshya, or the noun which the various adjectives in the sentences modify. The Supreme Lord has two kinds of forms. One is comprised of beings which represent his glories within the material world, and the other, not any form of matter, belongs to the spiritual realm. Dhruva knew the first kind of form before, and now he is privileged to see the spiritual form. Because he is still a boy of only 5 years, he cannot be expected to have had much higher realization before he was initiated and instructed by sage Narada. Is Dhruva still 5 years old? It's been 6 months since he went to the forest. Maybe he's 6 years old. I don't know. Text 57 will unveil the weak logic of attempts to prove that the Supreme Lord's form is not eternal. So anybody who has an idea, maybe this isn't right, maybe the Lord's form isn't eternal, wait until Anuchet 57. We'll defeat your argument then. Any questions? No questions? We'll move on to the next paragraph. Okay. Tadeva Vyanakti. This idea is developed further, and it's another statement by Daksha in his prayers, the Hamsaguya prayers, Canto 6, Chapter 4. Yo nu grahartam bhajatam paramulam anamarupo bhagavan anantam namani rupani cha janma karma bir beje samahyam paramat prasidatu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is inconceivably opulent, who is devoid of all material names, forms, and pastimes, and who is all-pervading, is especially merciful to the devotees who worship his lotus feet. Thus he exhibits transcendental forms and names with different pastimes. He's devoid of all material names and forms and pastimes, but he exhibits transcendental forms, names, and pastimes. May that supreme personality of Godhead, whose form is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss, be merciful to me. Anamarupo, he has no name, he has no form. Namani Rupani, Janmakarma, Bir Beje, he's accepted names and forms along with his births and activities. Okay, here's Dhruva, not Dhruva, this is Daksha. We might think he's just a materialist, but he's here enunciating this very confidential understanding of the how the Supreme Lord has form and names. Materialists can't understand that. Atapi te deva panambuja dvaya prashada leshanagri ita evahi. Only someone who at least has gotten a small trace of your personal mercy, janati tatvam bhagavan mahimno, can understand, theoretically at least, the facts of your transcendental position, your glories. Only someone who has been favored by you. So we must give Daksha credit that he's pleased the Lord. He's got some devotional relationship with him. Not just a total materialist. Jiva Goswami explains this verse. Yo nama rupa rahita eva namani rupani cha beje prakatita van janma karma bhiksaha tani cha prakatita tavan ityartaha. In other words, he who is devoid of name and form has assumed or displayed names and forms, and he has displayed them along with his births and activities. Okay. Continuing. Vyatireke dosham aha anantaha. What would be wrong with the situation being otherwise, that he doesn't have any form because he's spiritual? Or because he has a form, he's not spiritual? What would be wrong by proposing either one of those is spoken by the word ananta, unlimited. Daksha is calling the Lord anantaha. Okay, going back to the Sanskrit. Yadi tasmin nama rupatwadi kam nasti tarhi tat chakti matvam prati sananta. Santatvam eva pasajye teti. If he did not have names, forms, and other qualities, limitation would be imposed on his being the possessor of energies. So, maybe he can have some other kinds of energies. We're not going to allow him any names, forms, or qualities. Maybe there's some kind of energy he can't have. But it's going to be very limited, if at all. We restrict him from not allowing him to have any names, form, or qualities. I don't know what kind of energies he'll be allowed to have. So at least it makes him very ananta, sananta, very limited. But as Daksha confirms, he's not sananta, he's ananta. He doesn't have any limitations. Okay, and then taduktam praceto bhik na hyantas twad vibhuti nam sananta iti giyase iti. This is also stated by the Prachetas, also in the fourth canto. Because there is no end to your opulences, you are celebrated by the name Ananta. Mayavadis may use the term Ananta to mean something else. Satyam Ganam Anantam Brahma. No limits. That means no names, no forms, because those are limits. But we're saying, no, he has unlimited personal opulences, names, forms, and everything else. And that's unlimited. And the Pachetas confirm. Continuing. Tat tat prakashane he tuhu. Bhagavan. The word Bhagavan is used by Daksha. Bhagatmaka shaktiman. The reason for his displaying all these opulences is spoken by the word Bhagavan, meaning possessor of energy, which comprises his opulence, his bhaga, the possessor of bhaga. Tasya shakter mayatvam nishedati paramak parakya shakti rupa ma lakshmir yasmin anyata paramatva vyagatak syad iti bhavaha. That this energy is illusory, is denied by the word parama. The Lord possesses energies that make up his opulences. That energy, don't say that energy is illusory. That we deny by calling him paramaha, meaning he in whom there is the goddess Ma, Lakshmi, who is known as his superior, para, energy. He's the one who has parama, the supreme Ma, the supreme Shakti. He's parama. That is to say, if this were not so, his being the supreme would be contradicted. If he doesn't have the supreme energy, then I guess he's not the supreme. So we must accept that he does have the supreme, he does possess the supreme energies. And also there's the statement, Tasman namayaya sarvam sarvam aishwarya sambhavam amayo hishwaro yasmat tasmat tam paramam viduhu. Here's the word parama again. According to the statement, which is from 419. Okay, we don't have a reference for it. Okay, we don't know where it's from. Thus, all this does not come about by Maya, but is rather born from the opulences of Godhead. Because the Lord has no connection with Maya, he is known as Parama. Okay. Commentary. Now the next verse in the Hamsa Guhya prayers of Daksha is discussed, the one following the topic verse of this Anuchet. We read the verses before it, three of them. Now the verse after 30, this is 32 or 33. This verse further develops the idea of the Supreme Lord's having spiritual senses by revealing why he exhibits his names and forms in the material world, even though for material minds and senses, he has no name or form. As far as materialists are concerned, you have to tell them he has no names and forms because they can't understand spiritual name and form. He does this to reciprocate with his devotees. He exhibits his names and forms to reciprocate with his worshippers. Therefore, Daksha prays, may he also reciprocate with me. That's what he's not just talking, you know, in a professor talking in a philosophy class. He's praying to the Supreme Lord to reveal himself. Sage Parashara has explained the title Bhagavan and its derivation from the word bhaga, asset, in the Vishnu Purana, 6574. And Srila Jiva Goswami has elaborated on this definition in the Bhagavad Sandarbha, back in the third Anuchet, and also in its Sarva Sambhadani appendix. So if you want to see the details, you can look at, especially at the Sarva Sambhadani. The word Padama is found both in this prayer of Daksha and in Dhruva's prayer cited above. Okay, both verses use the word Parama. Although it is a common word meaning simply most, in both these prayers it can be understood in two special ways. One is accompanied by his superior Maya, and also beyond the ordinary Maya. Parama. I mean, it could be a Parama Ma Yasya Saha, he who has Bahuvri, he who has the supreme Ma. Or he who is Parama Ma, that would be an inverted Panchami, an inverted Panchami Tatpurusha. He's superior to Ma. He's beyond Maya. Anyone who tries to see him without his superior Maya, his favored consort, cannot know his true supremacy. Okay, any questions? Dharmada Gopalpo.
Hi, Krishna. Hi, Krishna. Thank you very much. Can you explain Vyati Reke Dosham Aha Anantaha?
Vyati Reka. Where's the Vyati Reka? Where is it? Where?
It is
I see.
The second sentence.
Oh. Well, that just means what would be wrong in taking it the opposite way around. Well, I already mentioned that. Where it's being claimed that he assumes names and forms and also births and activities. If we tell, no, he can't have any names and forms. He's supposed to be perfect, therefore he can't have any names and forms. Then actually, we're limiting him by that. And it's confirmed, no, he's not limited the way you want to make him limited. He's ananta, so he can have all the names and forms he wants. That's what's wrong in saying, no, he can't have names and forms.
And then there's the interpretation of parama, meaning he in whom Lakshmi, in whom there is Lakshmi, who in the form of his Shakti, which is known as Para.
Who is known as... Well, I think it's in whom. I think it'd be simpler to say of whom there is, he who has.
Well, yes, I mean, yeah.
When you say, you know, Bahuvri usually means he who of whom there is a lot of rice, not he in whom there is a lot of rice.
Because it says you're Para, Kya, Shakti, Rupa, Ma, Lakshmi, Yasmin.
Yasmin, okay, okay. So something
in whom...
There is the supreme, the Shakti named Para, yeah.
There is Lakshmi, which is the Shakti, whose name is, which has the name of Para in the
right.
Form. So, okay, Ma means Lakshmi.
Yes.
This is a gloss of Ma.
Ma means mother.
Mother, just okay.
Lakshmi is the supreme original mother.
Ma, just like that, okay? Because
yes.
In the dictionary, you cannot find this Ma, okay.
Can't find Ma.
No.
Okay, maybe it's not a Sanskrit word. I don't know. You sure there's no Ma? I mean, in modern Indian languages, the word Ma is there. It's usually referring to Durga as Ma, mommy. I don't know if it's lacking in the Sanskrit language. I think it's also in Sanskrit. But he didn't have a mother. Is that what he said? Yeah. Yeah? Upon whom? Upon whom? Okay.
Okay, and then there's a second meaning that I don't know where I got it from. It's in the commentary that he's superior to Maya. Oh, well, that's there at the end of the paragraph. Parama, no. Where does that come from? Oh, in the verse quoted, Tasma Namaya Sarvam. He's called Parama because he's has nothing to do with Maya. That's the verse from anonymous source. We don't know where. Okay. Sarvagipu?
In the second interpretation, Parama, does it mean that he is superior of Ma?
Superior to the material Ma.
Yeah, Ma. In this case, we imply Durga Devi, material energy.
He's what?
Durga Devi, material energy, Maya.
Yeah, but Mahamaya.
Mahamaya. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it says everything, all this that exists is not made by his Maya. So by Maya there, we mean material Maya. Okay, we can move on to 49.5. Nanu, sarva nama vishwarupa tve, tadrahitye cha, santieva tad upasaka pramanam. Okay, now Purvapaksha, who says, well, for his having all names and all the forms of the universe, all names and all the forms of the universe, and also his being devoid of these, the worshippers of each of these aspects of his are evidence. Okay, so he's got worshippers of both kinds. Those who worship him with his forms and those who worship him as formless. The Purvapaksha is saying, well, that shows, that's good reason to accept that both are real. Atra tu ke syur it yashankya aha. But who is there to serve as evidence of this particular aspect? Well, I guess we're in the context of Dhruva talking to Lord Vishnu, who just appeared to him, I think in four arms or eight arms. Daksha? Okay. But, okay, Daksha is worshipping some particular form. So, okay, yes. Okay, we're talking about, okay, we can accept he's got his gross material form, his Vishwarupa, and he's got his impersonal form. They're worshippers for both of them, so they're bona fide. But what about this personal form? This Bhagawan you're talking about, what's the evidence for him? This is answered in the words, Pada Mulam Bhajatam Anugrahartam, that's Daksha speaking. He says, you show your lotus feet for those who worship them in order to favor them. This is answered by the words, to show mercy to the devotees who worship his lotus feet. So there's your evidence. Bhagawan's got plenty of devotees who worship his feet. Yoga sankhyayos tat tatvam nasamyak prakashate. Kindu bhaktav eva, bhaktir evainam nayati, bhaktir evainam darshayati, ityadi shrute. This is the Matara Shruti that Madhvacharya cited in the third chapter of the Vedanta Sutra. Prabhupada also quotes it in the Bhagavad Gita. This is answered, okay. This reality is not completely revealed in yoga and samkhya, rather only in devotional service. So the yogis can realize the universal form. The gyanis who practice samkhya can realize the impersonal form. But this personal form, can only be realized in devotional service. and that is stated in the Shruti, only bhakti leads one to him, and only bhakti reveals him. Tasmad yuktam tayor vivada matra tvamiti bhavaha. Thus, in effect, it is quite appropriate that the opposition of these two opinions is only a matter of arguing for the sake of arguing. The argument between the impersonalists and the worshippers of the gross form. Ata eva, vakshyate anantaram eva. Right after that, in the same, right after Daksha finishes his prayers, Shukadev says this. Iti samstuvatas tasya satasmin agamarshane pradur asit kurushreshta bhagavan bhaktavatsalaha prita padak suparnam se ityadi. And therefore, right after this verse, it will also be stated. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who is extremely affectionate to his devotees, was very pleased by the prayers offered by Daksha. And thus he appeared at that holy place known as Agamarshana. O Maharaj Parikshit, best of the Kuru dynasty, the Lord's lotus feet rested on the shoulders of his carrier, Garuda. Okay. So, Daksha is thinking about and talking about the Lord's personal appearance. Therefore, the Lord, in reciprocation, showed himself right away to Daksha. He wouldn't have done that if Daksha was an impersonalist or a materialist. He wouldn't have done it unless Daksha was thinking about him. Commentary. Yogis and Sankhya speculators may perform their own varieties of upasana or meditation aimed at realization of the Supreme Truth. But the full development of upasana into loving worship, bhajana, can only be experienced by those who take shelter of the path of devotional service. So, in the yoga system, there is mention of Ishvara Pranidhana, mention of, Patanjali mentions, recommends you can meditate on the Supreme Lord to help purify yourself. And some yoga teachers must be teaching detailed method of doing that, meditating on the Supreme Person. And Sankhya philosophers, they may study the Upanishads. Jnanis may study the Upanishads and hear about various upasanas, means to of focusing your attention philosophically, by philosophical speculation, to focus your attention on the Supreme. There are certain passages of the Upanishads that are called upasanas. We can translate upasana as worship, but it's not just, it's not doing a regular puja. Upasana is meditating, trying to meditate on the Supreme. And in the Upanishads, there are various passages that teach you, that are sort of programs for meditation, tell you what to think about exactly. These are called upasanas, programmed exercises for meditation on the Supreme. That's what we mean by upasana in the context of the Upanishads. And there are 33 recognized standard upasanas that you can find in various Upanishads. I actually give a complete list of them later on in one of the commentaries. The sequence, continuing the commentary, the sequence of development of the devotional attitude is outlined in the Matara Shruti. First, bhakti leads one toward the truth, and then she shows him to the eyes of the devotee. So there's two phases. Bhaktir Evam Nayati. Bhakti brings you close to the Supreme. And then you realize him. In other words, gradual devotional practice is the preliminary approach by which a candidate's desires and intentions are purified. As long as practitioners of yoga and sankhya maintain inferior intentions, they cannot progress to direct perception of the Supreme Truth as Bhagavan, the possessor of all personal assets. Daksha fortunately received the grace of the goddess Bhakti, by which he felt appropriate sentiments and spoke appropriate words, in response to which, as Shukadeva Goswami recounts, Lord Vishnu at once appeared to him in person. Any questions? Damodar Gopal?
I have two questions. First of all, what you said in the purport, in the commentary, that in the Upanishads we can find 33 descriptions of upasanas.
There are 33 standard upasanas. There may be more.
These are meditations on the form of
Like the ones that are traditionally identified, the particular exercises for meditation.
Of the universal form.
No.
No? Of what?
No. This is not yoga. This is Sankhya. This is for the Gyanis. Upanishads are for Gyanis, so that's in the Sankhya category. It's more or less impersonal meditation, but sometimes not completely impersonal.
But what do they meditate on if it's impersonal?
An example is the Dahara Vidya taught in the Chandogya Upanishad. The exercise reads, you should think about this, that the heart is like a lotus. And in that lotus, there is a house. And inside that house, there's a subtle sky. You should meditate on what's inside that sky. So that's talking about the supersoul inside the heart of the finite living being's body. The supersoul is like that house, sky. But there is something in the sky. That means that the Supreme has qualities. The supersoul has qualities. You should meditate on the qualities of the supersoul. So thinking about this Dharaha Vidya, the exercise of meditating on the subtle sky inside the house, inside the lotus, which is the heart, that is an exercise for meditating on the qualities of the Paramatma. That's one of the 33 Vidyas, the Dharaha Vidya.
Thank you.
Sure.
Then from the text, from the Anuchet, Atashman yuktam tayo vivada matram dvam iti bhava. And therefore, it is appropriate to say that they're just arguing amongst each other.
That they means those who say, those who propose meditating, those who meditate on, those who say the Supreme has a physical form, that the material world is his body. They think that the universal form is God's body, and that's it. And those who say he has no body, he's impersonal. So they're arguing with one another.
It's just for the sake of arguing. And what's the logic? It says, therefore. Well, what's the reason?
Because the real answer is when he shows himself to a devotee, then all the argument's finished. They're just arguing. Nothing settled. They're just arguing for the sake of arguing. The only settlement is when the Supreme Lord responds to someone's attempts to practice devotion to him and reveals himself.
Because they'll never understand.
They'll never understand. They'll just keep on arguing back and forth forever.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. Now, yes, sorry.
So the question, I found this whole shloka from Madhara Upanishad, which you quoted in the in the commentary. Bhaktir evayatam nayati, bhaktir evayatam darshayati, bhakti vasah purusho, Bhaktir eva puyasi.
Yes.
So the third line is means that bhakti vasak purusha, bhakti can conquer Krishna.
Yes.
Supreme Lord. And therefore bhakti is proclaimed in all Vedic literature.
Bhakti is supreme.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It is quoted also in Priti Sandarbha 65.
Priti Sandarbha. Yeah. Okay. Next paragraph. Paramulam bhajatam ityanena tan prati rupa prakatyat purvam api rupam astyeva iti vyanjitam. Charanam pavitram vitatam puranam ityadi shute. The words for those who worship the soles of his feet imply that his form exists even previously to which his showing it to them. Well, yeah, it's not that, see, the beje may be taken to mean assume that he's really impersonal, but these people are worshiping him, okay, the impersonal becomes personal just to respond to the personalists. But the statement is that they worship the soles of his feet. So he must have some feet. He must be personal already, even before he makes up, you know, the fools think that I'm impersonal and now I'm becoming personal. Avyaktim vyaktam apanam. That I've just assumed I'm really impersonal, I'm just pretending to be person, and I'm just doing that now. But originally I wasn't a person. But the devotees are practicing before they get any realization. Throughout their practice, they're worshipping his lotus feet. He must have such feet. Not just they're making up an idea of feet, and then he shows some feet because that's what they were thinking about. No, he had those feet, and that's what they were meditating on and worshipping all along, even from the beginning of their practice, devotional practice. This is confirmed by the statement of Shruti and others, such as, his purifying feet are all expansive and ancient. Charanam pavitram vitatam. Those feet are purifying, they're pervasive, and puranam. They're very old. It's not that the feet were created, you know, God didn't have any feet, but because you were thinking about feet, he made up some feet just for you. No, these feet are ancient. Beja ityatita nirdesha pramanya dardyayanadi tvam bodhayati. The indication of past tense, beje, not budgete, but beje, past paroksha bhuta. The indication of past tense in the word beje, he assumed, expresses, for the sake of corroborating the authority of the statement, that his forms are eternal without beginning. So this is past tense to indicate something that always was. He has assumed it, and he always has been assuming it. In Sanskrit, we don't have separate perfect and imperfect. Savyashenna and Yesavyashenna. We don't have separate perfect and imperfect forms. The same form can be understood as perfect or imperfect. He assumed once and for all. You know, Clark Kent, you know, put on his Superman costume. It's a thing that he did at a particular time, and now it's done. Now he's dressed up like Superman. Or it can be imperfect. He's always been doing it. He's been, every day of his life, he's gotten up in the morning and brushed his teeth. Okay, now, and also the word ananta. Ananta padasya cha namani rupani chanantanye veti bhava. The word ananta, without end, further indicates that there is no end to his names and forms. That means no beginning either. It's not that these names and forms were just created yesterday to respond to your meditation. They're anadi, no beginning, no end. Atra prakrita nama rupa rahitopi ititi kacha. And finally, the commentary to this verse says, and that's Sridhar Swami's commentary on the sixth canto prayer of Daksha. Sridhar Swami says, prakrita nama rupa rahitopi. although he is devoid of material names and forms. Dakshak Sri Purushottamam. The verse under discussion was spoken by Daksha to the personality of Godhead. So that's the end of the 49th Anuchet. And also the end of the file. But there's a commentary here. I'll read it. Daksha understood that knowledgeable devotees worship feet which actually exist, not imaginary feet created just for worshiping. These feet of the Supreme Lord are not only absolutely real, according to revealed scripture, they also occupy the entire expanse of all time and space. Daksha used the past tense, beje, implying that the worship of the Lord's feet go back indefinitely in time to Brahma's worship at the beginning of creation. And before that, to the eternal worship of Narayan, Lord Narayan, by his devotees in Vaikuntha. Since his worship has always been going on, he has always been reciprocating by displaying his names, forms, appearances, and pastime activities. Thus he is called Ananta, unlimited in all ways. Qualities unlimited by the restrictions of material nature, and an unlimited number of qualities. All, each one of those qualities is unlimited in their influence everywhere eternally. So no limit in the sense that material nature doesn't impose any limit, time and space, or yes, that you can't exist forever, you can't do everything you want. Those kinds of limitations are not imposed. Material nature has no power to impose limits on his names and forms and activities. Also unlimited in the sense that they're countless. There's no limit to the count of how many qualities he has. And every single one of those qualities is unlimited. It's where and when those qualities manifest has no limit. Continuing, Srila Sridhar Swami's comment in this context of the worship of the Supreme Godhead, that the Lord has no material names and forms, okay, he says it, so what? This is relevant because it is important to recognize, as the Mayavad impersonalists refuse to do, the Mayavadi refuse to recognize that the Supreme Truth is not altogether empty of qualities. Okay, that finishes the Anuchet in the file. Any questions?
Though we are a little bit over time, I have a short question. Why do they use like words like bhaja that he assumes he accepts? Why such words are used? Can they just say like has or... I noticed in Sanskrit it doesn't seem like there's a word for
himself.
That.
Krishna himself talks like that. One thing is to throw the Mayavadis off track, to give them, you know, something to confuse them, so they start thinking that it's temporary. The Lord's body is temporary.
Also, I noticed in Sanskrit there's not a word like for I, like in English it says, I have this.
Well, there is no verb in Sanskrit that means have. There's no verb have in Sanskrit.
Yeah. But they say, okay, mama asti, that is mine. Well,
yeah.
In English we say,
You can say existed always. You know, you can make a very clear statement. And there are many places where it is. It's definitely said explicitly that the Lord has qualities eternally in some places. In other places, they're being poetic and maybe throwing out some you know, tidbits for the Mayavadi so they can misunderstand it their own way. Paroksha vada rishayo mama eva api paroksha priyaha. Krishna tells Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita, the rishis like to talk in evasive language. And I like it also. Why? Well, it's a way to hide themselves. You know, I'm naham prakashak sarvasya. Just by hearing even my words, you can't understand me unless you have some faith. The faithless will misunderstand, and everything's set up to make them misunderstand. Okay. Of course, budge doesn't just mean assume. Budge is the root of bhakti also. Which? Save, yeah. Budge means, first of all, service. Devotional service. Well, that would be passive. This is active. Not he is served, but he serves. He's the subject here, not the... Yeah. So, I'm not sure how to make it. Yeah. You can't really literally translate it as serve. He serves his body. You know, he assumes a body, but it means that he always has it. But Mahaprabhu... That's vibhaj. If you actually add the prefix vi, that makes the opposite.
I remember the three meanings of bhaj. Was it one was worship, another one to appear, manifest, and a third one was there.
Maybe, okay. But I think bhaj, by adding the suffix, which negates it.
Because then it will make even semantically perfect sense, because... As it says in the first canto, also in the tenth canto, it says that the Lord manifests His form as distinct from illusion for the welfare of all.
Yeah.
It's in one of the first verses, and also in the tenth canto, the demigods are telling Krishna that because your form, you make your form distinct from illusion, that's why we can judge everything else as real.
Yes.
So that may mean that it's not that he didn't have any feet, but then manifested them all of a sudden, but he manifested the existence of his foot, of his otherwise eternal feet, to people who haven't seen them before.
Yeah, we're talking about manifesting.
In other words,
not that he makes some feet, but right. He shows his feet. You know, just like, you know, when you're being polite, you don't stick your feet in front of someone's face.
Yeah.
You keep your feet tucked in under your dhoti. Yeah. You know, but there may be a reason to show your feet. You know, did you wash your feet this morning? Yeah, look.
Yes. So Mayavadis are trying to...
So I reveal my feet for a specific purpose.
So Mayavadis are trying to defeat Krishna by...
Defeat him, yes.
Trying to get rid.
But they're just Vedantis. They have their teeth knocked out. Yes?
I checked in the Dhatupata, so Bhaja Sivayam, it has four meanings. To serve, worship, divide... and experience.
Okay, it can mean, budge by itself can mean divide. Yeah, because it means to, yeah, share. Yeah, but that's vibhaj also. Yeah. Oh, budge means to share. Yeah, yeah, so it does mean to share out, to split up.
He shares.
Where does it say experience?
Fourth one. It's the fourth one, fourth meaning of this.
Okay, experience too. Okay, that's a versatile word.
He gives his devotee to experience his transcendental form.
Well, the devotee is not part of the statement. Well, it just says he does something with feet. The feet are the object. And so I don't think it's he experiences his feet or he worships, he preserves his feet. He just, he gets feet. He acquires feet. Accepts. Okay. I don't think experience works. I mean, it's a meaning, but not all the meanings will fit in each context. Well, if you have four meanings, only one of them can be the one used at any particular time. A word that has multiple meanings doesn't have all the meanings at the same time. Only one meaning, only one of those meanings at a time. Yes.
Also, it might be interesting that in the previous verse, in the statement of Maharaja Parikshit, who confirmed that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, appeared to Daksha, it is said that Lord's lotus feet rested on the shoulders of his carrier, Garuda. So, like special mention of his lotus feet.
Yes.
Maybe it's connected with this. Because
Daksha was talking about feet.
Yeah.
And he came showing his feet.
Yeah.
Yes.
days ago we had a discussion on the verse 48.1, Anishkada 48.1, and there was some confusion about how the line of argumentation of Jiva Goswami was unwinding. So if you could, I don't know if you have some time to look it up and clarify it for
us. No, I haven't. I haven't looked at that.
If you have some time, maybe if you could.
I'll try.
Because we spent a lot of time with Bharat Rampra trying to come up with some clarity about.
Okay, well, it requires my looking back at the original commentary by Baladeva Vidyabhushan. Okay, I'll try to do that today. All right, we'll stop for now. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Domitor, can you get into the library? Tell him I want Stavamala, Rupa Goswami. If we have one more than one edition, I'll take all of them.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.